This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The student-teacher relationship has a special prominence in Zen that in some ways differs from that many other traditions. And it stands in a particular relationship to the practice of Zazen. Now, in many traditional ways of thinking about practice and the role of a teacher, teacher is someone who instructs you or initiates you into a practice and a technique, and then is there basically to exemplify or embody the fruits of that technique, that if you practice this well enough and hard enough and long enough, well, then you can be like me. Zen isn't exactly like that. See, from the very beginning, it problematizes what is being taught, and it equally problematizes what's being exemplified. What is being taught, as Dogen said, and you've heard me say many times, is not a technique. A technique is something that you can do well or badly. And the dilemma of instruction in Zazen is that for beginners, it's virtually impossible not to approach Zazen as a technique that they're doing well or badly, that they're trying to master. It is the fruit of many years of practice to finally have some experience of what it would mean for Zazen not to be a technique. You can't instruct anyone in that, and you can't bring them to that style of sitting through any kind of instruction. In a certain way, Zen recognizes the inevitability of people coming with curative fantasies, notions of mastery that have to be enacted and worn out before there can be room for any alternative. Similarly, what the teacher embodies is something of a mystery. We all come to a practice with idealizations and fantasies of what we're looking for, what we want to become, who we think has the answer, and what we imagine the answer is going to look like. And basically, we're wrong on just about every count. And yet, the teacher has to bear at least some kind of passing resemblance to our fantasy in order for us to stick around and absorb the possibility of the answer being different than what we imagined in the first place. And styles of teaching vary in how traditions or individual teachers try to work with this dilemma of the student's transcendent fantasies. There's certainly a tradition in Zen that joins them and plays I've got it, you don't with the student, and for a long time challenges the student to get it too. The opposite end of the spectrum, teacher may basically maintain that there's nothing to gain and try to exemplify no gain and non-striving and simply the practice of presence and fullness and completeness in of themselves and the moment of themselves. A student has to be able to recognize something about that in order to be drawn to it. When people ask me about student-teacher relationships, ordinary mind, very often they come with the idea that there are steps to take or barriers to cross in order to become my student, and that there's a kind of sense of curriculum requirements that have to be met in order to matriculate, right? And some schools will join with that idea that you have to put in so many hours or attend a certain number of sessions, or sometimes it's just pay a certain amount of money. But whatever it is, there are things you need to do in order to become a student, and everybody acts like they know what a student means then. If there is a barrier here to becoming a student, it's essentially that I want to see if a person can tolerate the ambiguity of not being told what a student is. Are they able to make any use of the blank screen to see what they project onto it in terms of their own idealization and curative fantasy? What do they imagine they're becoming? What do they imagine the teacher has? What do they think this relationship is going to be about? Rather than providing an answer in advance, I'd like to see if they are able to make explicit some of what they implicitly carry around in terms of those fantasies. Zen is full of dialogues of students asking questions that they don't quite know, where they don't really know what they're asking for, except a kind of, I'm stuck, try to free me up. And receiving answers that they for a long time can't recognize as answers. a sort of classic case of that is Rinzai is a young monk asking over and over again what is the ultimate truth of Buddhism and being hit by his teacher. And like most of us, his assumption is that somehow he's doing something wrong and he's being chastised. But he can't, for the life of him, figure out what he's done wrong, why he deserves to be hit, and how he could possibly present himself differently or more sincerely or appropriately in order not to be hit. And it takes a long time for him to recognize being hit is an answer, not a punishment. Being hit is a demonstration of immediacy, of stop thinking, just be here, be present, right? Wake up. Now, most of the time, life is a good teacher in the way it confounds our curative fantasies. We come to practice with fantasies that we all have in common, really, that there aren't a lot of newer original ones. They're all variations on wanting to end our suffering through becoming imperturbable or invulnerable or completely autonomous. Find basically some exception to the law of impermanence and interdependency. That we're going to develop a strategy that will make us exempt. And life is a pretty good teacher in that it doesn't grant us any exemptions, and that just by trying everything we can think of to get an exemption, life will basically tell us, you know, no, that's not going to work. Or, well, maybe that'll work for a while, but it's not going to work forever. And teachers sometimes are seen as hurrying that process along. It's the model of the teacher that undercuts our attachments, undercuts our solution. But I think, for my part, I think the harder job of the teacher is not to try to do life's job for it, not try to disabuse you of your fantasies any faster, but to in some way present an alternative to those fantasies. And that's both a subtler and more difficult job, because the alternative to those fantasies is simply life as it is. Those fantasies are all about life how it should be, how we want it to be. So we have to find a way to come to terms with life as it is. And the teacher, if he models anything, models that kind of acceptance of life as it is. Now, that means an acceptance of our own individuality, peculiarity, deficiency, problems, a long list of things that we come to practice to get away from. And so that some way we have to have some reassurance almost that a person can give up on all these projects and not land in despair. They can give up on these projects and in some sense be willing to live their life as it is. And that may be a very tough thing for any of us to do. In a certain way, the hardest qualification of being a teacher, to simply be publicly willing to live your life, not to put yourself out there as having acquired something so special that you are now invulnerable to what everybody else is vulnerable to, but that you are exactly in the same boat as all the students in a world of impermanence and vulnerability, but you're the one person not trying to escape it.